Lineouts. Racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles. Dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop, and I'm Brendan Nell. I'm without Liam this week. He's off in the Kruger National Park somewhere, having a well-earned rest. So Liam, we're hoping you're seeing lots of wildlife. But with me today is old friend and colleague, old friend of the pod as well, the respected rugby writer, Gavin Rich. You see, I called you respected there, Gavin. Welcome to the pod.
Well, at least somebody respects me. Good to know.
Yeah, it's an interesting week because there's a lot to talk about. And I think we're going to start about the least controversial part of it was the Stormers' loss against Glasgow on Friday night. The Stormers are one of the teams you cover from week to week. And they were just blown apart. I mean, I think I said to you after the game is, what happened to their defense? They used to have the best defense in the league. And on Saturday, what's it, 16, 17 line breaks or something like that? Or they're 9 in the first half. Open the gates for Glasgow.
Well, you said it. You hit the nail on the head there when you said it was the least controversial game of the weekend. Because I did say in my preview that the Stormers being the Stormers and rugby being rugby, which it is these days, is that the Stormers will probably end up losing because of a refereeing error or something. There could have been lots of. In fact, the Stormers, I thought, were benefited a bit from the refereeing of Andrew Brace in that game. It was something like 17 penalties against 4 or 5, if I remember correctly. So 17 penalties for the Stormers. So that is actually how bad the Stormers were, was that they actually got so many penalties. I mean, I spoke to Dobbo earlier in the week, and he's talking about how much they dominated the second half, and they did. But they didn't make anything of it. And, you know, just the symptomatic of that game was Andre Hugenventer going over the line and dropping the ball. You're completely right about the defense. It was all over the place, but that's not new. The defense has been a bit problematic for a while now. It came right against Benetton, and that's when the Stormers produced one of their best performances of the season. It was outstanding, actually, in the Champions Cup against Sale. I don't know if you remember that game. The Stormers won 40-0. And they were all over the Stormers for about the first half an hour, and the Stormers were brilliant in repelling them. But subsequent to that, it hasn't always been so great. But I do think that, you know, if Dobbo was honest, he gambled a bit with the selections. Look, they do miss Ruan Nel. There's no doubt about that. But then I also don't want to listen to that excuse, because Ruan Nel's also getting a bit long on the tooth now. So he's not going to be around forever. So what is the Stormers' succession plan when it comes to outside centre? I don't think Suleiman Hartzenberg is an outstanding player. I don't think he's an outside centre. So I think that they're going to have to change that plan of turning him into a centre next year. Look, he has only just turned 22, so we could be proved wrong in the long run. Apparently, Rossi has told Suleiman that he's in his plans as an outside centre, and that's making Suleiman want to play centre even more, which is understandable. But, you know, I know Rossi well enough to know that he can sometimes admit when he's wrong too. So I remember he did that with Sabelo Sanatla. He used to always tell me that Sabelo Sanatla was going to be a great international player, and I was sitting at a sevens tournament, and I saw one of the Fijians run over Sibello, and I immediately SMS'd Rossi, and I said, "What do you think now?" He said, "No, I agree with you." So maybe he'll end up saying the same about Suleiman. I think Suleiman will be a good player, but I'm not sure at the moment whether it's going to be in the midfield.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a very talented youngster, and certainly to have played 50 games in the URC. I mean, there's another argument that comes around that. I mean, about how such a youngster does get 50 games so quickly in the URC, but that's for another day. But the other guy they've also lost is Wandisile Simelane, who's gone, who really actually started looking like he was kind of settling in and feeling at home at the Stormers. Also, I mean, had a couple of games where things didn't go his way, and he tried maybe a bit too hard. But he certainly looked like he enjoyed it more than his stint at the Bulls, and probably more than the last part of his stint at the Lions as well. And now he's also heading off. Just, yeah, the Stormers prospects going forward in the midfield aren't that great.
Well, the big problem with the Stormers, I mean, look, and I read a column earlier this week about the Stormers' this game against Glasgow, and I was specific about the Glasgow game. They were very poor there. I do think the Stormers have a bright future, or I like to think that they have a bright future. But, you know, the Stormers squad this year was 57 players. Next year, it's being shrunk to 44. How do you expect John Dobson to actually improve the Stormers when he's actually getting a smaller and smaller squad? And it appears he's getting a smaller and smaller budget. I was very excited about the Stormers getting equity partners, but I've just started to feel that it's the big one that they missed was when Marco Masotti was knocking on the door. If the Stormers had the resources that the Durban franchise has, I think that they would be challenging for Champions Cup by now. But they don't have that. They have guys who maybe understandably feel that they need to get the business right before they kick out. But I mean, it's not just Wondersili he's going. And just on Wondersili, I think that there's two parties at fault there. I think that, you know, his agent should be looking at it and thinking, listen, finally I'm starting to settle somewhere. I should spend another season or two at the Stormers and establish myself, and who knows, maybe establish myself as a Springbok contender rather than go overseas. And I think the Stormers are a bit at fault as well, because they're not prepared to throw the money at him that they could. And that's the problem. Marnie Lebok isn't just going on a sabbatical. He's probably going to be going for good. And if you want to play the Stormer style of rugby, I'm sorry, you can't just say, well, we've got Sasha Feinberg and Gomazuli. What happens on the days when, which can happen quite frequently, Sasha Feinberg and Gomazuli isn't available? So, yeah, and also another thing I've noticed, you know, the Stormers pride themselves on being very, I don't like the word transformation anymore, because I think South African rugby has transformed. But like, let's say multicultural. They're a team that represents the Cape Town, and they look like Cape Town. But what I've picked up is that a lot of the Stormers players that are leaving are actually players of color, to use that old bloody Orwell term. A lot of them are players of color. Joseph Dweba, I think they should have thrown money to keep him. Apparently, he is very completely bevested in the Stormers. He's just going because he's going to get more money somewhere else. Another black player there. Okay, they're bringing in Tutuku Nchunu next year, who's effectively a direct replacement for Franz Ketsoff. But the Stormers do have problems. I mean, yeah, I'm hearing that maybe Franz Malherbe will never play again. So there's a potential weakness of Tartet. Yes, they've got Nedling Fashir and they've got Suzzy Sandy. But then what happens after that? I mean, there was that horrible incident that happened with Corne Welbach when he was playing for Griquas a couple of weeks ago. We're hearing he's okay and he'll play next season. I hope so, because he is supposed to, I think, be the next cab off the rank. But it's just that, you know, the Stormers' exit lounge, if you can put it, or departure hall, has been far more busy since they won the URC in 2022 than the arrivals hall. Last year, they lost, as you know, and also a lot of black players. They lost the Nama Kaba. They lost Hakchiva Diamani. There are probably a couple of other, if I really think about it. You know, a couple of those loose forwards that they had. I can't remember the guy's name. He was at Free State before, and he came down to the Stormers. But, you know, there were a lot of guys that went through the departure lounge last year.
Willy Engelbrecht, another one.
And Willy Engelbrecht, of course. Okay, well, yeah, he's not a player of color, but Willy Engelbrecht's not. Gone back to the Pumas. It's potentially problematic for the Stormers, and you know, from what I'm hearing, the two guys who are coming in, which is Mchunu and 35-year-old Kobus Reinach, are the only guys coming in for the Stormers. Okay, there's some players that have come through during the season that have marked themselves as good players. Paul de Villiers immediately springs to mind. When Jonathan Roach played, he looks like a star of the future. But if I was a Stormers fan, I would be starting to get a little bit impatient now. It's not like they like Bordeaux, who came from nowhere, who were effectively like a sort of Crystal Palace of Champions Cup rugby, and now suddenly have come and picked. Because I saw that being, I mean, somebody writing in this last week about Bordeaux. I mean, about the Stormers, and saying they can console themselves because a couple of years ago Bordeaux were losing. But the Stormers aren't like that. The Stormers actually won the trophy 3 years ago, and they've gone sort of systematically backwards since then. And that needs to be a concern. And the way I'm reading it, John Dobson's going to have a really amazing campaign next year just to match what they did this year by finishing fifth. And I don't think people are going to have the patience for that. I really do think that Cape Town as a rugby environment, as a rugby center, should be the one in this country that has the most money ploughed at. We don't have, every time I hear an excuse, every time I hear Dobbo, in a press conference say, you've got to understand, we don't have the budget of the Bulls. Apparently the Bulls have a 40 million rand more budget than the Stormers. Yes, that might be true, but then why is that the case? For goodness sake, this is Cape Town. Cape Town shouldn't be. Cape Town isn't like sort of the English. If we were to use an English football analogy, Manchester and Liverpool, obviously big football centres that command a lot of money. And somewhere like Brighton, where they finish eighth in the league, is not. So the Stormers aren't a Brighton. The Stormers are actually a Manchester. So they need to actually have. They need to have a big budget team. Or at least a bigger budget team than they have at the moment. And that's problematic for me. And I think that's why I make a prediction. I think the Stormers next year are going to do worse than they did this year.
I think on that, just the final point, because we could spend probably the whole pod on this, on the Stormers alone, is how much of this is actually as direct result, I suppose everything is, of the mismanagement and of Zeld Marais and the mess that they've left in, because surely I understand there's a smaller budget, but part of that must be because they're still sorting out all the mess that they, the millions that they owe property companies and all the stuff that Zelt left them with.
Yes, exactly. But the one thing that Zelt also did and his cronies did was treat Marco Masotti and his bunch like they were sewer rats.
Yeah.
If they hadn't done that, the Stormers would have the money to ride that, because from what I understand, I mean, Marco's got much more money than anybody else around the place. So, for this project, I mean, I know the Bulls have got a very rich guy who sort of underpins them, but I think he's got other things to worry about. Whereas whereas Marco's group are quite focused on the Sharks. So it's, so that's really what I'm saying is that the Stormers missed a trick when they were messing around a couple of years ago and chased away potentially the biggest biggest equity partners from a financial point of view that a South African team can have. That's a problem. And I'm sure that Marco and company would have been quite happy to be in Stormers as well, because the Stormers are the most supported. Well, I don't know if they're the most supported brand, but certainly when it comes to bums on seats on match day, the Stormers are the biggest South African brand. The crowds that turn out at DHL or Cape Town Stadium are way bigger than anywhere else. Even this last weekend when I was in Durban, there was quite a nice crowd there for the Munster game. But I was thinking to myself, if the Stormers were playing Munster in Cape Town, it would have been 50,000.
Yeah, look, you've got to give the Cape Town crowd credit. They always do turn up, no matter how well the Stormers are doing. Yeah, I mean, the Sharks, I think, had 25,000 there. I think the figure I saw, the Bulls at 22. I saw some people giving me flack online saying, where's everybody? But you've got to put it in perspective. Munster had 12,800 at Leinster had 12,800 and Glasgow had 8,000. So,
okay.
I mean,
you know what the difference is? Yeah. The difference is if I was a Leinster supporter, I would know that I've got another game coming up next week, a much bigger game against Glasgow. That I had a really big game, a Champions Cup game against the Northampton Saints, not really that long ago, and that I'll probably have a final to look forward to as well. So I think that if I was a Leinster fan and I knew that the opponents were just the Scarlets, I'd also say that I'd go do something else this afternoon.
Mm. Okay, well, let's turn to this weekend's semi-finals. I think the big one, the only one that we're really worried about, more, other than from who's going to play next week against the South African team, is the one at Loftus, the Sharks Bulls. It's a heavyweight clash. I wrote something in the week saying that the front row battle is worth the price of admission itself. A huge the best scrum in the competition against the World Cup winning scrum, basically. And but there's so many matchups across the park, and it's quite an intriguing battle.
Well, I mean, it's worth the price of admission unless you're an Aussie. I mean, there's some parts of the world where they don't really enjoy scrumming that much. So, yes, from a South African point of view, and if you're one of those people, like you're an anorak who likes scrums, then that could be great. But I think it's going to be about more than that at the Loftus. I think that the Sharks know that when they get to Loftus, they're going to have to play quite a different game to what they've played at King's Park in the last couple of weeks. That dew factor won't be there. It will be running conditions. They're playing against a team that plays up-tempo rugby and that can play up-tempo rugby in their conditions. That's also very good. In fact, the Bulls don't have too many weaknesses. I mean, they've got strengths across the board. So the Sharks have multiple threats to deal with. I think that one of the big drawbacks for them is the change of tempo that I think they're going to experience this week. I think it is going to be a much faster game than they have played in the last couple of, in the last couple of weeks. But the big positive for them is that they are a team that we know can win finals and that it stays calm in the most extraordinary of circumstances. The Sharks are the one team that can go behind by 15 points, although the Bulls did it last week, but they were only playing Edinburgh. Sorry, Short Everett, but you know, I don't think that, that it's the same being behind against Everett, against Edinburgh on the Heartfelt, as it is being behind Munster by 11 points, like the Sharks were last week. And against Ulster, they were about 15 points down against Ulster, you'll remember, when they played in Belfast not that long ago. So the Sharks have been very, very good at digging deep. It started, in fact, for me, it started in the EPCR Challenge Cup semi-final last year against Clermont. You'll recall that Clermont outplayed them in the first half. It looked like the Sharks were gone, but they somehow clung in through the boots of Sia Masuku in the first half and then through just starting to become the dominant team in the second half. And I think that the Sharks, when it comes to championship rugby, when I say championship rugby, I mean playoff rugby, I think the Sharks are very hard to beat. So that's why I think even though they've got home ground advantage, the Bulls might be up against it this week.
Well, I think if you just look at, I mean, we talk obviously often about the Sharks, and the point I always make is, it's just that you're waiting for them to click and play to their potential the whole time, because they've just, on paper, that team is just, you know, would probably be matched up against the giants of Europe in terms of just what they've got on paper. But they tend to, they're a good team at scrapping results. They're a good team at winning arm wrestles, but they haven't really exploded this season. We haven't seen them. It always seems to be a bit of they have to claw their way across the finish line half the time. To me, the Bulls at the moment are in a very good place. I think they're a lot better than the last time the Sharks played them, although this is a better Sharks team that's coming up to Loftus this time. And I think they're just more in sync where they want to be. They're a lot more mature. The way they won those games against Glasgow and Munster overseas showed a lot of character there. And I think they've got their bench right, which in the past they didn't have as well. Their bench didn't give the same impact. Now suddenly they've got a front row. That's the Aka van der Merwe, Mornay Smith. Yeah, those guys are coming on, and you've got some quality. And like Marco van Staden was on the bench last week, and they don't have the same jitters as they had maybe, well, I would say 3 months ago, and not even 6 months ago.
I think that the Sharks are in a much better place too. So I think both teams are actually much better off than when they last played. Both times that the Sharks won this year against the Bulls, they were quite under strength. In Durban in particular, you'll recall the TV commentators were maybe making more of a meal of that than we both felt they should. Because in Durban, even an under strength Sharks team should be backed to at least come close to beating the Bulls. But that game at Loftus was the one that surprised me, that they managed to get home there. And when you talk about them clicking, and I was pleased to see that Sia actually agreed with me when we interviewed him this week. I thought that the Sharks were building into the game last week in Durban. They started off poorly. For the first half an hour, they struggled again. At the end of the first half, I was telling everybody that in the press box that don't forget this is the third consecutive half that the Sharks have played without scoring a try. But I had full confidence by that stage, because the last 10 minutes, the Sharks of that first half, the Sharks were starting to click. And in the second half, the thing that befuddled me was that the Sharks didn't put Munster away. Because the Sharks were completely dominant, I thought, in the second half. They had most of the game. That they ended up drawing a normal time confuddled me. That they didn't put them away in extra time was equally as confusing, because the Sharks were completely dominant then. They were camping in Munster territory. So it was. I'll tell you one thing about the Sharks. I'm actually going to write this in Supersport in the next couple of days, so I'm sort of scooping myself. And it's not that it's an exclusive, but the...
Sorry, we're laughing because there are some people who like to claim exclusives for the most arbitrary articles. But yeah.
I just think that, you know, when I watched, I mean, it's always a lottery when you get to a penalty shootout. I mean, it's quite a unique thing in rugby. I mean, soccer, they have it all the time. So sometimes you can sort of say, well, you know, this team's got really good at penalty shootouts. It has a better goalkeeper or whatever. In rugby, you can't say that. But because of the Sharks' winning habit and ability to just somehow prevail, and even it dates back to the Currie Cup final last year where Jordan Hendrickson suddenly kicked a monster penalty. Like, you know, we all sort of like maybe thought he couldn't do that because we'd seen him fail it with clutch kicks for the Lions. He kicked that monster penalty to win the Currie Cup for the Sharks. Somehow
he missed one for the Lions against the Bulls to win that Loftus. The Lions should have won the game, and he missed the kick that would have won them that. So yeah.
Exactly. So somehow the Sharks found a way, and I was sitting there in the press box, and I had a fellow journalist next to me, and he kept on going on to me about, oh, look at Jaden Hendricks, or look at that. I mean, I was sort of missing that because I was just like sitting there, and I was just focused on, you've got to nail your next kick. I saw Jaden go down. I mean, I couldn't understand what the fuss was about. I mean, for goodness sake, the guy would. I mean, you die where you stand on the battlefield. I mean, he fell down and he had cramp. Unless they sort of brought a stretcher onto the field and carried him away, there wasn't much that Jaden could do. So I didn't understand all of that. And I heard that there was lots of chirping. I heard from the Sharks camp afterwards that Jaden told Jack Crowley that he was only a 50% kicker. And that's what got everything going. Jack Crowley took huge exception to that. But it was – I was the point I'm making, though, is that there's something about the Sharks, and like you can call it their calmness that Sia spoke about, which comes from the Springboks in that side that have been at World Cups, who do what, you know, what do they always say? We keep chasing until it's completely done, you know. And it doesn't matter how much they're trailing by, they'll still be in the game. And they'll be calm in those real clutch moments of the game. So that's one thing that the Sharks do have this week. And that's one thing that they've built up over this period where they haven't been playing particularly well. And another thing that we see agreed with me. I mean, I'm making it sound as if I made the statement and then he agreed with me, but it's not the case. It's just something that I've written already, is that you say that the Sharks have been struggling all season. They weren't in late October going into November and into the initial stages of the Champions Cup. They actually really cook. I mean, they put Munster away by 20 odd points. They ended Graham Rowntree's coaching career. They beat Glasgow Warriors only by 2 points on the scoreboard in the end, but you'll remember that Glasgow Warriors did what they do really well, which was come back and grab two consolation tries right in. In fact, they did that against the Bulls in the league game not that long ago. They are very good. I mean, they were outplayed by the Bulls. I think the Bulls were leading 25-6 or something, and Glasgow eventually came back and I think grabbed a bonus point. And that's what the Glasgow did at the Sharks. But the Sharks were comprehensively better than them at Kings Park, and the Sharks were starting to play a very good all-embracing style of rugby. Something's happened in the interim where the Sharks lost their sort of attacking mode. But I think that they started to get it back a little bit last week, and I think that we're going to see it. Look, I mean, rugby has changed. I mean, the idea of, oh, we're going to see this team go out and play ball in hand rugby is for the dinosaur ages now. Contestable kicking has become huge. The Sharks have got good ball winners when it comes to the aerial battle, and that's probably where the game's going to be decided. So, yeah, that's what it's going to come down to. But so I'm not sort of saying that the Sharks are going to go out there and sort of throw the ball around crazily. There'll probably be quite a lot of kicking. I think the Bulls and the Stormers' back three. Well, I keep saying the Stormers. The Sharks' back three are going to be under pressure.
I think before we go any further, let's have a listen to some of those comments that Sia has made to you. And straight after that, I'm going to put up some comments from Ruan Mokia, just about the last game and just about how the mental aspect of facing the Sharks and how they need to be mentally stronger than they were last time.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're confident, but we're also aware of what the Bulls have done since we last played them. You know, they've won, and that's why they ended second in the log. So it's going to be hard going up to Loftus, and they've shown over the last couple of games what they're capable of. But our focus has to solely be on us this weekend, and we have to. Yeah, like last week's game was very tough and it went for the 100th minute. So there's so much that we can iron up on. And there were a lot of good things, but there's a lot of that we need to work on as a group. So the focus is just on controlling what we can control this week. I'm expecting what they're good at. You know, they scored most of their try from line out. They're good mauling side. They actually play a lot. You know, they actually play a lot off the top, strong loose forwards. who can contest in the breakdown. Cameron Henicom has been amazing this season. That's why he's one of the contenders for player of the year. Jan Hendrik Wessels, the way he's been playing lately, you know. So, and obviously Rowan Hoekje, Marcel, and it's for the pack. You know, we know up front, pack is going to be a big challenge for both packs. So we're going to have to stand up to that. And then you've got guys in the back, like Ambrose, who's been amazing. And Vili, who takes charge, he directs the attack of the Bulls. And then the wingers that can finish. And Kanan, who makes good decisions on the outside there. So there's a lot that you have to look at. And that's why it's difficult to prepare for them, because there's so much they can do to you. They score of counter and turnovers as well. And like for us, we're going to have to be at our best with the plan that we have for the day and focus on that. Because if we think we're going to stop or focus on them too much, where are you going to start, you know, to stop them? So, yeah, it's going to be a physical game. Definitely set piece is going to be vital. But there's so much that can come out of the game, I think, with attack, defense, and obviously turnovers, which they're good at too. And we're also good at that too. No matter how the win comes, as long as it comes, I don't mind if it's dramatic or not dramatic. We just want to win. And I don't know what's going to happen in Loftus. You never know what, you know, but we, yeah, I thought last weekend was exciting. It's the first time I've ever experienced anything like that. And I thought it was good for rugby. People are talking about everything that happened in the game, which is amazing. There are fans and supporters sending messages like, oh, I was at the edge of my seat the whole time. And that's what you want, you know, that's what you want, a competitive game where it gets heated in moments. That's exactly what people want, you know, and it's good. And it was good for us. We were under pressure all the time, and you got to think under pressure. And younger guys who haven't experienced that, got to experience that. So this weekend, it might happen again. It might not. We'll see. But either way, the win comes. It doesn't matter how it comes.
Morning, Ron. Hope you're well. Just looking at the Sharks games, a lot of the times, I mean, they're obviously extremely physical, but a lot of it is mental as well. And I'm sure you'll probably agree the last game at Loftus, they almost sucker punched you guys when you guys came back into the game and there was one or two tries against the run of play from up and under, I believe, if I remember right, was one of them. Just maybe talk a bit about that mental battle of the Sharks, because it's the physical is there, as in all South African derbies, but the Sharks, it seems to be a bit of more of a mental game as well with you guys.
Yeah, no, Brendan, definitely. I think where that comes in is with the quality of players they have. If you look all around the park, they have amazing players. It's guys that's been around the block. They've got so much experience, and then it's just guys that you will always be there till the last minute. They've been there, they've done that. So I think mentally they are an extremely strong team. So we know that's going to be a massive battle this weekend for us, from minute one to minute 80. I think it's going to be very important for us also to be mentally in the right space and. It's just going to be a massive grind, I'd say. Less than a massive grind the whole game.
Rodney, just last one for me. If there's one, maybe, and I don't want to say negativity about your game, but I'm sure you guys have been working on for the entire season, is that there seems to be sort of almost a 10 or 20-minute period somewhere in the game that you guys, I wouldn't say have some soft moments, but you let the opposition back in at times. And although you've had an extremely good season, I mean, Saturday, the start was obviously where it was. But just from a player's point of view, working on that, I know every week you try and give the best, but how difficult has that been to make sure that those moments don't come around in again?
Yeah, I know. It's a brilliant question, and it will be awesome if we can figure that out. But yeah, I wish I had a perfect answer for you. But it's just, I think it's all about, again, mainly being switched on from minute one. Sometimes, especially like if you get a team like Edinburgh, if you switch off one minute, then the pressure compounds and you can see 2-3 tries, then you're under massive pressure. So this weekend is going to be very important for us to make sure we don't get any of those 20 minutes lapses in the game. It's all going to be mental.
Okay, I'll chuck that in there. I just checked the time and thing. Okay. So, Gavin, then it's come down to maybe, I think my only thing about the Bulls, I think the thing that worries me, and I say it worries me, but they've got themselves out of that hole almost every single time that it's worried me, is that the Bulls will give you 10 minutes of soft rugby where they allow other teams in. It used to be in the second half. They sorted it out. Now against Edinburgh, it was in the first half. But there's always seems to be a period of time in the Bulls game where they sort of allow the opposition, they take a step back and they're a bit more passive and they allow the opposition to come in. And some of the tries Edinburgh scored was quite soft for me. So I think that's the one concern they have. But I don't think they're the perfect team yet. I think they've got some great, we talked earlier about Stormers not getting players in, the Bulls are getting a bunch in. I mean, next season, Andre Pollard's the obvious one. They've got what's Jan Serfontein, Marvin Ori's coming now, I see as well. The ex-province young Lop, Dylan DeLue as well. And Jean-Andre Rudolph's also signed for them. So it's some very strange signings that they've made. But they're certainly going to have a deeper squad next season. But this season, this game, yeah, I don't know. It's an intriguing one. You could argue both ways for the result this week. And I suppose, to quote a cliche, the team that sort of handles the pressure the best is probably going to walk out their winners. So give me a prediction.
Well, I mean, just on that, on Jake's signings, I just hope he knows that. I mean, I just hope he can give all of those guys game time, because, you know, there's the shortcut to sort of having an unhappy squad is to have too many players that aren't playing. So, you know, that is the problem. A prediction for the game. When I was at King's Park this last weekend and I saw the way they won and what they went through, I think that John Plumtree was close to a cardiac arrest, and so were probably some of the players that were watching from the side. I just think that the stars are suddenly aligning for the Sharks. And when you win like that, I think that it's a sign that things are aligning. They're not afraid of going to Loftus. I mean, the Bulls should feel that they would have been much happier had they been playing an overseas team at Loftus. I don't think the Stormers and the Sharks are scared of Loftus, and the Sharks certainly aren't. They've won the last couple of times they've gone there, and they've won in very close games. So I think that the Sharks are going to prevail on Saturday. I don't think it will be by a big score. It will be another really close game, but I'm quite certain that the Sharks will win. And I'm in Durban at the moment. Having come down here from Cape Town for the game on Saturday, I may be going to a school reunion game on Saturday, or I may be coming to Loftus. But if Glasgow Warriors win on Saturday afternoon and the Sharks win, then I'll be here for a final the following week, and I'm not going to bet against that happening.
Well, yeah, I suppose I'd have to keep my, being in Pretoria, I'd have to keep my Bulls hat on there. I just think the team's matured a lot from last season when they lost to Glasgow. They're a more complete unit. Saying that, I think this challenge, well, I suppose it's probably on par at least with playing the end of the last season, but the Bulls tend to like semifinals. It's a final I worry about them, if they can do that again, given their history with finals. I'm going to back the Bulls. I think it's going to be incredibly close, and it's going to be a clutch game. Somebody's going to step up and be a hero. I wouldn't be surprised if it's somebody like Cameron Honeycomb or even Keegan Johannes. There's a name who's really surprised me, and his try on Saturday against Edinburgh was one of the best, one of the nicest tries to see. And I'm so happy for the youngster, but yeah. I think that's the top. You're going to need somebody like that to step up and be a hero. So I'm going to go Bulls. It'll be close. It's going to be tense to the end. We've got this thing for those of you listening. Just as one point, I say we've got this thing that as a journalist, when you're writing a match report, for those who are listening, it's almost impossible because you always have to get your match report out as fast after the game as possible. And we hate those games, Gav. I'm sure you'll agree, where the game goes down to the final wire. And you can't start writing until the end of the game. You try, and there's ways you can probably do some of your work already, but you can't write your top end of your match report until the final whistle goes. And I've got a feeling it's going to be one of those tense games that we're going to take a sigh of relief that the final whistle's gone and then only be able to start writing.
You know, one of the reasons why, if I was aligned with the Bulls, I'd almost think that it's better that they don't win, is that there's this weird narrative sort of starting to come out that they choke us because they don't win finals. So, and if you're going to be playing Leinster in the final,
I'm going to address that
if you're going to play Leinster in the final, you're going to be underdogs. You're going to be playing in Dublin. You've got to travel the week before the game. The chances of the Bulls beating Leinster again to me, are quite slim. So then it's going to be, people are going to start. I don't agree with that, by the way. I think that if you win semifinals against Leinster, like the Bulls have two of the 3 years in URC rugby, I believe that if they do that, then they're definitely not chokers and they do have temperament. But if they lose again in a final, then people are going to start adding it up. And the next time the Bulls play the final, they're going to say they've lost three finals. Forget about the fact that Leinster actually would beat anybody on the planet in a final, possibly at the moment, if they recover their form. I think they lost a bit.
Well, yeah, I want to say on that, I want to think if any team could be called the chokers tag, it's probably Leinster. They haven't won a semi-final in URC. You know, they haven't got to a final yet. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous. And I mean, I got to say, and I'm not going to mention names there, but anybody who read that article would know who we're talking about, which publication we're talking about. Because from what I hear, Jake apparently confronted them on that. And the answer was, oh, well, we're trying to create debate. Now that to me, I mean, yeah, there's lots of ways of creating debate, and I don't think you and I subscribe to that way of trying to be controversial. And if there's a genuine point, yes. And if you're writing that before a final, yes. But if you're writing that before a quarterfinal, I mean, it's a bit ridiculous to me. So I just think I don't think there's a narrative. I think it's what somebody's trying to push a narrative. But
I'm just saying that when it starts to add up. And they start rolling on top of each other. Look, I mean, we could have a situation where in 10 years' time, we're looking back and we're saying there's a particular team that lost seven finals because every final they played against Leinster and Dublin. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. If Leinster had played to their potential in the playoff games that they've played so far since 2022, I think it was when we came into the URC, if they played to their potential, they should have actually won. Well, maybe not last year because they only finished third in the league, but they should have won. They should really have won, by the end of this competition, they should have won three of the four URC editions.
Yeah, well, didn't they finish top in almost? I think the Stormers finished top in one of them.
The Stormers finished second the one year and third in the other. It was Munster who finished first last year. Munster are a team that actually needs to have adversity. They need to sort of go the long way to win a final. Like Kitch Christie used to always talk about the high road and the low road. Munster need to be on the low road because when they were on the high road last year, they messed it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot more to Munster's story while Graham Rowntree left, and I'm sure one day that'll come out as well. It's a strange place. As we talked about the cramp gate and Jaden and all that earlier. Munster, the last ones to complain, because there are counter stories amongst the teams about how Munster sledges. And I mean, that's part of the game. I mean, it is what it is. I just thought I suppose if you wanted to be flippant, you could say it couldn't have been a quarterfinal without an Irish team losing. So there's a lot of people who might take that comment. Anyway, I couldn't help but say that. But yeah, I mean, I think you're looking at the other semi-final. It's an intriguing one as well. And yeah, Glasgow are going to have to come up with something better than they did the last two times. But I think they are also probably better placed than they were the last two times that they played Leinster. I think this is one they'll give themselves, especially the pressure that will be on Leinster this time, given their history and not winning semi-finals. I think that's going to feature huge. And I mean, if it happens again, I think Leo Cullen's probably going to have to look for another job. But it's going to be a huge game there in Dublin, and I can't wait to see that.
Okay, for me, the big hope for Glasgow in this game is what I saw happening in the second half of their game against Leinster last time when they played in Dublin. You'll recall that I think it was 10-0, and then Leinster came back and scored a try. Or was it 7-0 and Leinster came back and scored a try? And then you could see, you know, they talk about it squeaky bum time. You could see that Leinster suddenly looked vulnerable. They looked genuinely scared of it. I think that's, you know, what I was saying just now about the Bulls. When you lose successive finals, you lose successive playoff games, then people start adding everything together, and they're saying you've lost five games of playoff games in a row now. And I know it from having been based in the Cape during the time when they were never ever winning when they lost a whole host of the Stormers, that is, lost a whole host of playoff games at home. I mean, they were the only South African team ever to lose a playoff game to an overseas team in the Super Rugby era on their home patch. And, you know, that starts to impact on the player. And you can almost see the Leinster players in that game against Glasgow sort of, although it was weird because they'd already won the league, so it wasn't really a knockout game, but you could almost see them sort of, because they're so desperate to get away from that loss to the Saints in the Champions Cup, you could almost see the guys like starting to get nervous, and the crowd, the Dublin crowd suddenly became a bit nervous as well. And that's actually Leinster's, Glasgow's big hope. If they can get in there and they can make it a close game, and if it's still a close game with 20 minutes to go, and Leinster are within a score of Glasgow are within a score of winning it, then I think we could well see Glasgow win, because I think that if the choker tag does, as you said, does fit anybody, it fits them, because, and it's not just Leinster. Well, Leinster are the Irish team, but if you look at their World Cups as well, I mean, it's just like, you know, they do brilliantly all year, and then suddenly they go out in the World Cup quarterfinal, and they do it every single time. I know that was against the All Blacks last time, but come on, they'd beaten the All Blacks the previous times they'd played them. So it's and that's the thing. That's the narrative. It's the narrative that's always in the background. So Leinster come back, Glasgow come back into the game. The Leinster players are thinking to themselves, oh, goodness gracious me, here we go again. And they're scared of the backlash the next day. They're scared of what's going to happen. They're scared of how the Irish media is going to turn on them. And they're scared of how people are going to view them. And that is Glasgow's big hope. If I was Glasgow and I wanted to be talkative like Munster, I would actually start off the game by calling them chokers. Like, come on, guys. I remember my favorite sledge of all time was George Gregan, who, you know, a couple of minutes from the end of that game against the All Blacks. The
I know which one you're talking about.
2003. And he said, 4 more years, guys, 4 more years. I mean, if I was a Glasgow player, I would go onto the field and say, guys, another year until you can sort of prove whether you can play knockout rugby. That's what I would say. And I'd keep saying that to them. Come on, guys, can you play knockout rugby? If you don't get it today, we've got to wait another year. We've got to wait another year, guys. That can get under the Leinster skins, and it can actually really, really eat at you unless you're completely mentally strong. So that to me is, I don't know what, I've got Franco's number. I'll phone him and I'll say, listen, here's the narrative. This is what your guys want. In fact, don't even bother to play the game. Just talk to them and they'll fall over in a heap.
Oh, the question, they'll fall over the heap, though. But yeah, I think Franco's an astute guy. He's a guy who likes coming up with all plans. He'll definitely have a plan. Whatever it is, he'll definitely have a plan. And he's an innovative coach. And it might not be as in your face as your plan might be, but I'm sure there'll be some talk on the field. And I think the other thing for us is hopefully the good part is if Glasgow do it, there's a final in South Africa again, which I know is a nightmare for some people, and logistically, and a whole lot of European folks have to come down to South Africa, but it's wonderful for South Africans. So I wouldn't mind seeing a final, no matter if it's in Durban or Pretoria next week. It's going to be wonderful. So I'd be behind, and we'd be behind Franco, I think, anyway. Even though Jacques also there.
So. Yeah. You know he's not going to want to. You know he's not going to want that to happen. Is Charles. The CFO, isn't he, of URC? Because he's told me a few times about how much money they've lost, but because you can't obviously charge South African fans the same money in if you convert it from euros. I mean, they make a lot more money if the game's at the Aviva Stadium. It's sold out to Aviva Stadium. Well, I don't know how many euros they pay. Like, say they pay a 200 euros or whatever, that equates to sort of like 2,000 rand. I'm not sure that you can for a, I know that that's all separate issues, what's happening on the Springbok level at the moment. I mean, what they're charging for test tickets against Italy, but I don't think that you can charge 2,000 rand for a final ticket to the URC in South Africa and expect a full house. So it will be a little bit problematic for them, I think, because they've had three finals in a row now in South Africa where they've been caught short a little bit. And their very first final, of course, they were only allowed 30,000 into the Cape Town Stadium because of COVID. So they've lost out in the showpiece event a couple of times. So they're probably really hoping that Leinster do go through, although I gather that Leinster aren't the most popular team under the sun with anyone, actually.
Well,
I can explain that. I'll explain that. I mean, apparently they are quite difficult to deal with sometimes. In fact, the Irish teams generally seem to be. And you know, I hear that from media people. When I say media people, I'm talking about the PR people who work at various unions and you know, when it comes to like, you know, that sort of thing. So, and I think that there was at one stage a perception that we're Leinster won too much, because remember when before we went into the URC, it was the Pro 14, and Leinster used to win it every year. And I think that there was a built up sort of resentment there and thinking like, you know, if we're going to have a proper competition, let's break the sequence. And thanks to the South African arrival in the competition, that sequence has been broken. But and all the games have been played in South Africa. But that's what I mean when I say that Leinster are a little bit like unpopular. It's not that they're unpopular. It's they've got that same sort of people have got that attitude that you have to a team that have been serial winners. Although after 3 years of not winning a trophy, they're hardly serial winners.
Well, I think it happened to the Bulls when the Heineken Franz Lüdecker era happened as well. The rest of the country didn't quite enjoy the Bulls. You don't tend to like a team that dominates too much. I think Manchester United talked about the football thing when Alex Ferguson was there. I think probably most of the football world hated them at that stage as well. Liverpool recently as well in the Jurgen Klopp. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of that going around. People don't like teams to dominate for too long. And that's the beauty of sport, I suppose, is the fact that those sequences do get broken and those cycles do, the wheel does turn. So it's going to be fascinating. I'm really looking forward to these two. The only thing for me, which is a bit bad, is that you can't sit. We're going to have to be at Loftus, or I'm going to be at Loftus. You might be there as well. But you're going to have to leave halfway through the Leinster Glasgow game, or you're going to have to watch it at the stadium, which is never really the same either. But for somebody sitting at home and watching two games back to back, I don't think you're going to find better games to watch this weekend.
No, absolutely not. Well, if I'm not at Loftus, I'm going to be watching a schools game. So it's difficult to talk to me about that, but then that's more of a social thing. But I'm hoping to be at Loftus on the way home to Cape Town or otherwise going up there and then flying back to Durban the next morning to come and cover the final the following week. It's going to be a great weekend of semi-final rugby. The semi-finals never fail to deliver. And just thinking back, if you think back to some of the semi-finals we've had in the 4 years, that first year, that semi-final in Dublin, where the Bulls beat Leinster at the RDS Arena, nobody gave them a chance. And then the next day, the Stormers going to the very last move of the game, a Warwick Gallant try, followed by Marnie Leboeuf's touchline conversion in a game where he had kicked an absolute shower. That was just like absolutely amazing. And then the following year, it was Munster against Leinster in Dublin. The Stormers played against Connacht, and they were always going to win that game. So that was one of those rare semi-finals which were one-sided. But there was that game in it was the Aviva Stadium, actually, where Munster beat Leinster. And then last year, Glasgow against Munster was one heck of a game. I don't know if you remember that. I mean, there's so much bad blood between those two teams. In fact, there's a lot of bad blood between lots of teams and Munster, I've discovered. But last year, it was at Limerick. It was in Limerick, and it was a really close game. And then Glasgow came out victorious against the team that had topped the log, and they were only fourth. And of course, then the Bulls beating, it was early in the day, the Bulls beating Leinster. That was also a phenomenal performance by the Bulls. So we've seen some really top quality URC games. So I would strongly urge anybody who's wondering whether they should watch both semi-finals do so. Otherwise, come to Northwood. Otherwise, come to Northwood and watch Northwood play Hilton on Saturday.
I'm sure that's going to be just as good a game. Now, to me, I mean, last year that game at Loftus when I got there, and I mean, I've covered a lot of games. You've covered a lot of games in your career. There's sometimes you just get to a game and you just the atmosphere. And you sort of realize. I just knew that day when I got walked into the press box. There's no ways the Bulls are going to lose today. There's just such a vibe around the place. Yeah, it would take a superhuman effort to beat the Bulls. Funnily enough, probably not the next week. And you picked that up. Yeah, it wasn't the same thing. There was such a build up to the Leinster game that it made it almost the final.
Played your finals. Yeah, played your final. They did what England did. They did what England did at the 2019 World Cup when they beat the All Blacks.
Yeah,
Yeah.
So it's going to be fascinating. But I think that's it for today. That's our pod. Thanks, Gab, for joining us. I'm sure Liam's enjoying it somewhere with a cold one, somewhere in the bush somewhere, and watching lots of wildlife. He'll probably be back next week. But we'll get you on again. Thanks for joining us this week, and enjoy the wherever you're watching it. Enjoy the semis.
I'll probably be sitting next to you at Loftus Press Box. Just one thing about that final last year, if I may. I always felt that the fact that the Springboks played on the same day as that final, and that I heard, I'm not going to tell you who's in the Bulls camp, who isn't there now, who told me that apparently the Bulls players were all completely preoccupied with what was happening in London. The Springboks were playing against Cardiff. Remember, there were a lot of guys who would have been playing in positions that the Bulls players wanted to be Springboks in. And I heard that like 2 hours before the game, there was a lot of focus on that rather than on the big game that they had to play that afternoon. I think that was a bit of a faux pas on SA Rugby's part that they actually had a test match on the same day. And I think that's what did in the Bulls last year. That's my final word.
Okay. Well, on that, we'll leave it on that. Hard to argue with that one. I've heard that story as well. So, yeah, let's leave it there. Thanks for joining us. We'll chat to you guys next week. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.